Greetings, and welcome to the Pressure BioSciences second quarter 2017 financial review and business update call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. An interactive question and answer session will follow formal presentation. If anyone should require operator assistance during the conference, please press star zero on your telephone keypad. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. I'll now turn the conference over to your host, Mr. Richard Schumacher. Thank you. You may begin.
Thanks, Matt, and thanks, everybody, for joining us on this beautiful day here in Boston. Not sure how it is where you guys are, but it's a beautiful day here. I'd like to welcome you to our second quarter review and business update. Before we start, I need to read a cautionary statement. The following remarks may constitute forward-looking statements within the meaning of the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1995. Forward-looking statements involve known and unknown risks, uncertainties, and other factors which may cause the actual results performance or achievements of the company to be materially different from any future results, performance, or achievements expressed or implied by such forward-looking statements. Such factors include, among others, those detailed from time to time in the company's filings with the Securities and Exchange Commission. We expressly disclaim any obligation or undertaking to release publicly any updates or revisions to any forward-looking statements to reflect any change in our expectations or any change in events, conditions, or circumstances upon which such statement is based. So the agenda today is that Joe is going to give Joe DiMaggio, who you all met last time as our new CFO and VP of Finance and running admin here. Joe's going to give a brief statement and an overview of the second quarter financial results. We're going to follow that with a general business update, and then we'll be pleased to take a few questions. So at this point, I'm going to turn it over to Joe, who will briefly go over the financial results of the second quarter.
Hello, everyone. Total revenue for the 2017 second quarter was $540,000 compared to $511,000 during the same period in 2016, an increase of $29,000 or 6%. This increase was primarily due to a higher revenue from grant-related activities and instrument sales. We believe that total revenue will continue to increase over the remaining quarters of 2017. Product and services revenue increased to $480,000 in Q2 2017 compared to $474,000 for the prior year's same period, an increase of 1%. Comparing Q2 2017 to Q2 2016, instrument sales increased to $347,000 from $311,000, an increase of 11%, while consumable sales decreased to $52,000 from $73,000, a decrease of 28%. We believe products and services revenue will continue to increase over the remaining quarters of 2017. Grant revenue increased to $60,000 in the second quarter 2017 from $37,000 in the prior year period, an increase of 63%. We believe grants revenue will continue to increase over the remaining quarters of 2017. Operating loss increased to $1.2 million in Q2 2017 from $1.1 million for the same period in 2016, an increase of $144,000 or 14%. This increase was primarily due to a significant increase in sales and marketing expenses during Q2 2017, an increase of $106,000 or 55%, combined with an increase in G&A expenses related to the hiring of a CFO and an increase in investor relations and business development activities. Net loss per common share, basic and diluted, was 54 cents for the quarter ended June 30, 2017, compared to net income per common share of 1.111 basic and net loss per common share of 3 cents diluted for the same period in 2016. Net income per common share for the period ending June 30, 2016 was primarily due to the impact of a favorable change in our fair value of derivative liabilities amounting to $3 million. Total revenue for the 2017 first half was $1.1 million compared to $1 million for the prior year same period, an increase of $70,000 or 7%. This increase was primarily due to higher revenue from instrument sales. We believe that total revenue will continue to increase over the remaining quarters of 2017. Products and services revenue increased to $1 million for the first half of 2017 compared to $929,000 for the same period in 2016, an increase of $78,000, or 8%. Comparing the first half of 2017 to the first half of 2016, instrument sales increased to $743,000 from $643,000, an increase of 16%, while consumable sales decreased slightly to $116,000 from $117,000, a decrease of 1%. We believe products and services revenue will continue to increase over the remaining quarters of 2017. Grant revenue decreased to $85,000 in the first half of 2017 from $93,000 in the prior year period, a decrease of $7,000 or 8%. We believe grant revenue will continue to increase over the remaining quarters of the year, as it did in Q2 2017. Operating loss was $2.2 million for the first 6 months of 2017, compared to a loss of $2.1 million for the same period in 2016, an increase of $97,000, or 5%. This increase was primarily due to a significant increase in sales and marketing expenses during the first half of 2017, an increase of $128,000, or 33%, combined with an increase in G&A expenses. Net loss per common share was 5.83, basic and diluted, for the 6 months ended June 30, 2017, compared to a net loss per common share, basic and diluted, 6.11 for the same period in 2016. With that, I'll pass it back to Rick.
Thanks, Joe, and I'd like to briefly give some thoughts on a business update from the first half of the year, the second quarter in particular, in the first half, and afterwards we'll open it up for some questions. Some of the accomplishments in the business end over the second quarter. On April 17th, we announced that Joe, who you just heard from, Joe DiMaggio Jr., had joined the company as its Vice President of Finance and Admin and also our Chief Financial Officer. Joe came to us with tremendous experience. He also came to us with experience here because he spent about 7 years with us prior to leaving. He went out into the world, got educated with a lot of three different companies, came back with that experience and the experience of working with us and what we did, and has really helped the company a great deal. And for me personally, since I had to wear that hat for about 2 years myself, along with CEO, Joe's been a godsend to us, and is a great company. Is lucky to have a guy with his background in the CFO seat. On June 2nd, we announced a 1-for-30 reverse stock split, as we said in the press release, and as everyone on the call pretty much knows, we did that to help us comply with NASDAQ standards, as at the time we were looking to uplist to NASDAQ, and we needed to meet the minimum bid price standard of $4 and change, depending on if you raise money and how many warrants, because they add that in. So it was basically $4.12.5. On June 5th, we announced that Professor Rudy Ebersold, who's been a colleague and a friend of the company, and he's a world-renowned protein chemist and the recipient of the 2017 very prestigious Karger Medal, which recognizes an individual who significantly contributed to the development of new bioanalytical methods throughout the world. He came to Boston, where he received the Karger Medal, and in doing so, he committed to giving two lectures. One was a private lecture only for invitation only, and one was open to the public. And in both the lectures on state-of-the-art proteomics research, he discussed Pressure Bio's PCT platform for sample preparation, which we've said often is a critical step in scientific research analysis. So very happy that Professor Ebersold won this award. It's only the second time the award has ever been given out in the last few years. And this is a gentleman who was voted the number one protein chemist in the world, the number one most influential protein chemist in the world in 2015, and he won this award. And in his acceptance speech and in his lectures, he talked about PCT and why they use PCT. So we were thrilled and honored that happened. That was on June 5th. On June 6th, we put out a press release that said that our recently released next-generation PCT-based instrument, the Barocycler 2320 Extreme, or EXT, as we call it for short, was going to be featured in multiple presentations at a major international scientific meeting, which is the American Society for Mass Spectrometry annual meeting that was in Indianapolis in June. And also, we talked about in that press release the fact that a top researcher, Dr. Tom Conrads, out of Inovia Health Center in Washington, D.C., Annandale, Virginia, had purchased two of our instruments and presented, he and one of his head guys and one of, in his lab, both presented on that first day and talked about the use of our system. One was a presentation that said our system was being used in front of the SCIEX, which is, as everyone knows, our partner. We have a co-marketing agreement with SCIEX. And then the other presentation was data related to using our system in front of the Thermo Fisher mass spectrometry system. So we're very excited about that. Because we were in a filing and because we started a roadshow in July, we went into a very deep quiet period. So there's been very little news coming from the company for the last 6 weeks. And so I'm happy to have this meeting today because if anyone has any questions, you'll be able to answer it and we'll be able to finally get back to a normal public relations information database that we can start telling people about all the things that are happening here at Pressure Bio. So we had a number of things that that occurred. We also mentioned that in the press release that yesterday we requested the SEC to withdraw our registration statement. We were looking for the past several months to try to raise some funds and to move the company onto the NASDAQ stock exchange. And I don't know how many of you know, but the market conditions are quite bad right now. One person, two people last week told me it's the worst they've seen in maybe 10 years. But the market conditions, especially for upgrades or uplists of OTC companies under the NASDAQ, which was pretty hot market for the last couple of years, is quite bad. So because of the poor market conditions and because of what we felt not a great time and not in the best interest of shareholders, we pulled that registration, and so this certainly has a number of impacts. And one is that we're no longer on the road, which it will allow us to get back, as I said, to a more routine way of communicating, which you know I believe in greatly. And we just don't miss a quarterly call, and we often try to get a press release or two of substance out. One of the comments I hear a lot is, with Pressure Bio, you don't get a lot of fluff in the press releases. When you see a press release coming out, it's generally not fluff. I'm very proud of that because we do have a lot of good things and going on, and we certainly are now happy that we're able to tell the world about them. So at this point, I think it's important to say that there's a lot of stuff going on, and I think the best way to talk about it is probably Matt to open up the phone lines and let people ask any questions that they might have.
Okay, great. At this time, we're conducting the question and answer session. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press star 2 if you'd like to move your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. Hold on, please, while we poll for questions. And we do have a question from Alan Stone from Wall Street Research. Please go ahead.
Hi, Rick. Thanks for the update, and hope I get to see you in San Francisco next week at the Money Show and be able to catch up in a little more detail there. I'll be staying at the Marriott Marquis there. So I was just wondering if you have some alternative interim plans on the capital raising front, given that you know you've announced that you've withdrawn the secondary stock offering.
We obviously are looking at all aspects, Alan. What this does by pulling this is it allows us to look at other ways of funding the company rather than just through a registered offering. And so we will continue to do that. There's a number of things that number of options we have. I'm not at liberty to talk about them. I'm sure you'll respect that. There are rules that relate to a company that has withdrawn a registration statement, and there's confidentiality issues out there. So the answer is this company has raised money consistently and successfully for 11 years. I believe we will be successful in funding this company. How we're going to fund it, when we're going to fund it, I'm not at liberty to talk about. I'm just, right now I'm very, very excited about the changes we've made in the company over the past few months in anticipation of getting funding. And just because that funding hasn't come in on the timetable, we hope, doesn't mean that we're not going to go ahead. We're going full steam ahead. And I think in due time, at the right time, we'll talk about, any type of funding that we're able to talk about. But at this time, I hope everyone understands that, mum is the word, and we'll look at all options. There is a silver lining in this, and that by pulling the registration statement, it opens up the whole world of options to us, and we're looking at all of them. But right now we're really looking at how do we grow this company concomitant with financing the company.
Sure. And I know that you've added some time ago a couple of more sales reps. How's that effort going on the product?
Well, we've talked on this call. In fact, at the last call, we talked about hiring two sales reps, and I think we had a press release out on that. We now have five people in the field, or we will have five people in the field after Labor Day. We have four right now, and we expect a fifth to be trained and ready to go in the field after Labor Day. The people that we've brought on, the salespeople we've brought on, are just terrific. We were very picky. We went through a headhunter rather than trying to do it ourselves on the back of the envelope. We looked at a lot of resumes, and we chose what we thought were the best of the best. And I'm excited about that because these are people who have sold capital equipment before. They've sold into the research market. They know what they're up against. We told them all what they're going to be up against. They have a terrific opportunity with a young company that is ready, we think, to pop and grow, and they can be part of it. But they have to be willing to they don't have to sell their soul to the devil, but they have to be willing to work and work hard. And I know I personally interviewed all five, and once they narrowed the big list down to the individual ones, and I told them all without hesitation that this is a great place to work, and it's a great place to grow and get experience, but you have to be willing to work because we're a tiny company, and if you're not willing to work, it's going to be very evident by everybody. So please don't throw your hat in the ring here unless you're willing to really work. And they all said absolutely. And so far the four that have started have proven it to us. Very impressed with them. And we have a fifth person coming on board. So very excited about it, Alan. It's going to be something which is going to change, I think, the face of this company before the end of this year.
Yeah, thanks, Rick. Look forward to seeing you next week in San Francisco.
You got it. I'll be there.
Our next question is from Henry Truck from Equities.com. Please go ahead. Sorry, Henry, your line is live. Go on to the next question from Suraj Singh from RedChip. Please go ahead.
Hi, Rick. Congratulations on your 10-Q.
Hi, Suraj. How are you?
Good. I just had a few questions. Just wanted an update on the SciAx deal and how is that deal helping PBio?
Sure. It's a good question. The SciEx deal has about 6 more months to run. The SciEx deal has been very beneficial to us. As an example, when I was on the roadshow, and I believe it's in the S-1, when asked about this, I pointed out the fact that, as you know, we released our new next-generation instrument, the 2320 Extreme, last June, but developing it has been very slow and careful, as it has to be, in order to get the right approvals and to have the right dossiers put away for the inspections, because we went through the ISO certification lab and everything has to be right. So over that time, they have built about 30 instruments, and we have sold every one of those 30, or we're using three as demos or one inside, but we sold 27 of the 30 or 26 of the 30. Everyone is being used. And I'm going to say about half went to SciEx customers. Some of them went to SciEx customers because we found them, and some of them went to SciEx customers because the SciEx customer called us through the SciEx agreement. So very happy that it's happened. The agreement does end at the end of the year. We will start to, after Labor Day, we will start to look at what we want to do after the end of the year. But if you looked at the goals of this agreement for us, and I can't, and I will not speak for SciEx what their goals were, but our goals over these 2 years were to get us known out there in the field, because we're a relatively unknown company. Get our technology known. We're a relatively unknown technology. We can say all the good things, and we can have some terrific key opinion leaders, but you know, there's 80,000 potential labs out there that can use or 80,000 labs that can potentially use our equipment. And if we get 10 or 20% of them, which I believe we could over a period of a few years, those are very, very intriguing numbers. So we need to get out there and get known. And how do you do that with a 9-person company with 1 person in sales? So, I believe that it's been a highly successful relationship for the first 18 months, and I assume it will be for the last 6 months of the deal. And what it's given us is the ability to sell half of our new instruments to SciEx-related customers, but it's also giving us name recognition and platform recognition that we just didn't have 2 years ago. So that's sort of the update where it is. I think the big question is, you know, do we re-sign with SciEx? Do we not re-sign? Where do we go from here? I can't answer that now. I can tell you that it's a major part of our plan starting after Labor Day.
Thanks, Rick. Now, you just told that you've hired about 4 sales representatives, and you're on the course to hire one more. Can we expect a backlog on orders? Do you have any backlogs right now?
We don't have a backlog, and I'm not going to say we never did, because we did. This company has been running in a very significantly undercapitalized mode for the past several years, and it has impacted on us. In fact, in June, we had orders for 5 instruments on June 1st that we could not fulfill, because we didn't have the cash to build the instruments to fulfill the orders. The good news is that through several means, we were able to get the cash in the door. The instruments were built, and the instruments were shipped. And so we fulfilled every one of those purchase orders. I'm pretty sure, I'm not going to say definitively, but I'm pretty sure that we basically filled every order to the T. Didn't have any extra instruments. If an order had come in on June 28th, 29th, 30th, we couldn't have fulfilled it, but it didn't. We had orders prior in the month that we were, going full court to try to make sure we fulfilled them, and we did. And 2 of those were to one of the biggest biopharma companies in the world, which we can talk about in a few minutes. But so the bottom line is, I hope that at some time in the near future, you'll ask me that question, and I'll say, we have a backlog. But right now, we don't have a backlog because we are building a lot of instruments. We got funding in from another source in June or so, and we are our contract manufacturer is building us 25 instruments. The first 10, five or six of which I just talked about, were sold. The other four have been sold, so we have at least 15 instruments coming in that we've had the cash to buy all the parts that are being built now. So our goal is to get out and sell those.
Thanks, Rick.
You bet.
Our next question is from Daniel Wong, a private investor. Please go ahead.
Hey, Rick, looking forward to you getting that funding in. I know you'd get it done as you've done before, so you know, happy to hear you can sound, you know, move forward and start getting some news out for you there. Most of the people there are already answered a lot of my questions as far as the sales goes. Can you maybe though fill in the blank for me as far as how the sales process goes? I mean, are most of these orders for the machines coming in, do they have to sell those out, or is a lot of it consumables focused for these salespeople?
It's a good question, Dan. Number one, most of these are for a new instrument. We've had a couple of people who maybe didn't have the budget for the new instrument and have asked about, and I believe we've sold or a distributor sold one of the older instruments. That's an instrument that sells for, you know, $30,000 to $35,000 versus $50,000 in terms of the list price. So the instruments we're selling are of the newer next generation. The bells and whistles on that are just so enticing to a researcher that if they've got 35 and we tell them what they could get for 50, generally they go back and try to find the other 15 to get the better instrument, better in terms of the bells and whistles. Still go to the same pressure. We were very fortunate. I'd like to say we're smart, and I'd like to say that, you know, we try to work as smart as we can, and we do. We're also a bit lucky. We were down to two instruments of the old type when the new instrument came out last June, and those instruments are gone. So we had a crossover that scared me a year before that. Was I going to be out of instruments for 4 months or 6 months, or was I going to have, you know, 15 of the old instruments and have to try to sell the older ones while I had the newer ones and kind of compete against myself? That didn't happen. We were down to two instruments, and we knew those would sell from people like the gentleman I just said that don't have the budget, and they can afford 30, but not 50, and so they buy the enhanced, and we really don't sell it to them unless we really think that's all they need. You know, you don't necessarily, depending on what you're doing, you don't necessarily always have to go with the top of the line. So they're going after our new instrument. No, our consumables were down. Probably the second time, I don't know, Joe, we should look at it, but it's probably the second time in 2 years. So, you know, in the last 8 quarters, I'm going to say consumables have been up almost every quarter. They were down. They were up appreciably in the first quarter. I don't know if it was timing. We had, a massive consumables in the first quarter and a lower amount in the second. But as I've said all along, we make a 50 to 60% margin on consumables, and we make a 50 to 60% margin on the instrument. And the margin dollars on the instrument are in the several $10,000, $20,000 range, and the margin dollars on consumables is in the $400, $200 range. So we push with one salesperson in the field, which we've had up to just a couple of a month or two ago. We push the install base. Now I will give you, because I know you, Dan, and you're going to push me anyway. So before you do that, I will give you a little bit of guidance. And I've done this once before, and it panned out. So, and I will say this is all what we believe. We've gone through 50% of the third quarter. We have already booked in our expected to sell, about 75% of what we sold last quarter and what we sold this time last year. I will say that these aren't purchase orders. Some are purchase orders, some have been shipped, but we have a spreadsheet, and we every week we sit down and we go through every single potential order, and the orders we have now, we rank them from 25, 50, 75, 90, 100%. And when we get to 75%, we're pretty certain it's going to come in. In fact, rarely does a 75%. We've been wrong a couple of times, and usually a bluebird comes in to make up for it. But generally when it hits it 75% or more, then we're pretty certain it's going to come in. You know, we're over $400,000 in expected sales for the third quarter through the first half. I'm not saying we're going to do 800,000. We've never done 600,000 before. But I'm saying it because you asked about the salespeople, and I can tell you point blank, there are two orders in that came from two new salespeople. I did not expect the new salespeople to play a role in our third quarter. I've said all along, I've cautioned everybody, these salespeople need 6 months to get trained. They need to get in the field. We don't throw them to the wolves right away. But I am tickled pink. I am so happy that we have received purchase orders from two customers amounting to close to $100,000 total from two of our new salespeople. And it's only August 15th. So and September is usually one of the top two or three months of the year. So we're very excited about the third quarter. But what excites me about the third quarter is the name recognition we've been getting for the past year that we talked about, but also the salespeople, even the guys that have just been on for a few months and just being trained, they have a Rolodex, they're going out, they're talking about things, and already a fifth of a normal quarter has come in from our four new salespeople, a fifth. We have an offer out and we have every reason to believe this person is going to be coming on board after Labor Day, and this person is going to be probably the person needs absolutely the least amount of, they'll need training, but they'll need a month of training and not five, because they just, they're right in the business we're in, and they have 17 years of selling into this business. So Dan, I'm very happy to say that our new instrument is selling. It's selling well. We have a brand new manufacturer. They're ISO certified. They have everything that's right. We brought enough money in to build 25 instruments, and that means 15 more are going to be available between now and the end of September. And our goal is to sell all 15, which would be a record by far of the most instruments sold in a quarter, and by far, and getting our sales guys out. So it's all coming together. And I just happy you asked that, and I knew you would anyway.
Definitely, and it seems like the demand's going. One last question, and I'll let you go. You mentioned the brand name recognition. You know, has there been anything going on as far as a cancer moonshot or some types of initiatives that are now trying to bring your company more to the forefront for people?
There really isn't. I tell people all the time, a lot of things in life are two-edged swords, and this is one. I tell people that we are not a proactive company in sales, not that much. We are reactive. I tell people that we don't pound the pavement to try to get the next consumable order. But it's a two-edged sword. Why don't we do it? Because up until a few months ago, we had one person in sales, and she was so busy taking the indications of interest from the field that she could not go back out in the field. And we had so much interest in instruments that we weren't going to spend that much time trying to sell additional consumables, because a box of consumables is maybe $400. An instrument is $45,000 average selling price. So double-edged sword. So the fact of the matter is we have a tremendous opportunity ahead of us. We've been fighting a battle with 9 people for the last 6 or 7 years. Now we're fighting it with 14 or 15 people. Now we have 4 or 5 salespeople trained, ready to go after Labor Day in the field. And we're really getting ready to crank. So it's exciting to think if we can do this without being that proactive, not because we don't want to be, but because we can't be, what can we do when we become proactive? Because we have the wherewithal to do that. It's very exciting for us.
Thanks, Rick. Looking forward to it.
Our next question is from Henry Truck from Equities.com. Please go ahead.
Hi, Rick. I see that the company filed a patent for UltraShear technology. Just wanted to see if you could provide more information on what you see there and the market opportunities that is in this space for pressure.
Sure. This is interesting question, and I appreciate the question. We talk about it. I think there's if I look two or three paragraphs in the 10Q, and there's certainly the same two or three paragraphs, and even a picture in the prospectus. All of these are publicly available to everyone. It's a great question. It's one of the things that has frustrated me a lot over the past 6 or 8 weeks. We have a patent filed in a technology that we think could change the face of this company to an extreme that I never dreamed of, and yet I've never been able to talk about it much except for on the road show a little bit for the last couple of weeks, and so I am very happy you asked this, because the only place we've talked about it is in with the roadshow, really, and the prospectus. So what I'd like to say here is that we believe, and this is based on references that we can provide people. One of them is TOOPS, T-O-O-P-S, in 2016, I believe, but we have these references. We believe there's a $10 billion market out there, based upon what we've read, in the area of clean label food that is clean labeled because the food has been treated with high pressure. And I've gone around the world in the past 8 weeks, and I've asked everyone I've talked to, do you know that there is a $10 billion market in food for high pressure processing? And they looked at me like I had two heads. Not one person said they knew it. This is a $10 billion market. You can go into your supermarket today, and you can buy high-pressure processed meat like ham and turkey. You can buy high-pressure processed guacamole, shellfish like shrimp, baby food, and you can go into Starbucks. Go into Starbucks this afternoon or tomorrow and ask for the Evolution juice. Evolution. Evolution juice on the very front says high-pressure process. You cannot find chemical additives in that juice. There are no chemical additives. Starbucks is a leader in this field. Starbucks has an entire juice line worldwide that it has its shelf life based upon high-pressure processing. This is a process where roughly 45,000 PSI is put on the juice, and it reduces the bacterial load or kills the certain bacteria to a point where you do not have to add chemicals to get a shelf life, to open it up and put it in the fridge for another 2 weeks or so. You get it from high pressure processing. It's called clean label. The clean label market is expected to be worldwide about $162 billion over the next couple of years. So right now we're looking at a $10 billion market for high pressure processed food, led by a number of companies, one of which is Starbucks. Why do I bring this up? I bring it up because Dr. King, who's been our head of engineering, one of the original guys, he's been our VP of engineering, senior VP of engineering since 2006. Ed Ting joined me along with Alex Lazarev and Nate Lawrence, the three officers we have until Joe joined us. They've been with us for 11 years. And Dr. King was with Flow, F-L-O-W, which is a leading company in the world for high-pressure jets, using high-pressure jets for cleaning and etching. He was their chief technical officer. When this first started to be discussed 15 or so years ago, Dr. Ting and Flo got very interested. In fact, they built a company called Aviewer around it. Dr. Ting and his colleagues went to Starbucks at the time to introduce them to high-pressure processing. Ultimately, Starbucks became a believer. They built a plant. They have millions of dollars of equipment, and they have a complete line of juices called Evolution that is high-pressure processed. Why do I bring this up? Two reasons. Number one, because it adds credence to the fact that high pressure can be used in multiple areas, in life sciences, in the food industry, in many other industries, and we as a company are an expert in high pressure. Number two, we received a grant, we've talked about it multiple times, $1 million grant from NIH, and they asked us, they gave us $1 million and said, use this money to help modify your equipment that is now being used in proteomics so it can be used in genomics for breaking apart cells to release DNA and to shearing or breaking DNA so it can be sequenced. While doing this work over the past couple of years, Dr. Ting and Dr. Lazarev came upon some very interesting data and very interesting developments. We'll call them inventions. And we filed a patent about a year and a half ago. And among the claims that we made in this patent is that we believe that this ultra-shear technology that we are developing, not inventing, but developing, could also be used in the food market. Now, ultra-shear technology has been around for years. Ultra-shear technology has been shown to be effective in certain foods where typical high-pressure processing is not effective. $10 billion worth of a market where it's effective. Juices. What we look at is food with high acid content, like citric acid in the juices. It seems like high pressure and high acid level in a food are synergistic, and they make 1 plus 1 equal 3. But if you look at less acid food or more basic food, like milk and cheese and mayonnaise and yogurt, high pressure processing doesn't work that well, so you don't find high pressure processed yogurt in Starbucks or the supermarket. However, it's been shown in the lab that if you develop an ultra shear, which goes beyond high pressure, and I'm not going to get technical here, it's just a new process. It's a next generation of high pressure, some people would say. You could actually go to some of these foods and it can become effective. We believe that we have developed a low-cost, scalable, commercializable method of bringing ultra-shear technology to an economical level. We believe that. It may never happen. We may never get the patent. It may never work. But we believe we will get the patent. We believe it will work. We believe that we have, because we are experts in high pressure, we believe that we've developed something and have filed a patent with claims saying that we think we can extend that $10 billion market into foods that cannot be high-pressure processed now. We've never talked about this before because it was under stealth. We just didn't talk about it. It got published in China, and the patent was published in China and Taiwan a few weeks ago, and because it was published, our lawyers gave us permission to put it in the S-1, we put it in the 10-Q, and to talk about it. So it's a very, very interesting project for us. We're very excited about it. This is a process that could change the face of this company. And what I've been telling investors is we believe we are a very good company for you to look at to potentially invest in because of what we believe is our future in the biotech and biopharma market. And in addition, you get this patent that's being prosecuted and working its way through. And if this patent comes to fruition, which we believe it will, it could change the face of this company. Our current business plan would be to go to the multi-billion dollar market now and go to the companies and license them to use this process for other foods and not to get into that business. That's very cash intensive, very capital equipment intensive. That's not for us. But I sure would like to, you know, if we were fortunate enough to get that patent, to go to them and say, how would you like to extend what you're doing in these high acidic foods into more basic or less acidic foods? Thank you, Henry.
Great, thank you. Our next question is from Gary Swetchenton from Plum Tree Consulting. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, Rick. Congratulations on your second quarter numbers. Part of my question has been answered regarding the current quarter, and you opened the kimono a little bit about the revenues that are in at the halfway point. You had mentioned earlier that you've added 4 salespeople, and you really didn't expect them to bring in orders at this point. You said they brought in 100,000 in orders in the current quarter. Can you look beyond the quarter now and looking at the 4 and the possible extra salesperson going beyond? You've had increases quarter over quarter, year over year. Can you talk a little bit about the fourth quarter and beyond about your increases, your margins? You've mentioned that you're building 15 new machines that are not sold and the demand is there. Can you talk a little bit about the growth going forward, having the ability with these new machines and 4 new salespeople out there over the next year?
So give Gary an inch and he wants a mile. I say that with a smile on my face. I'm not going to go much further than that. I did want people to know, look, I understand that because we've been sort of radar silent for the last 6 or 8 weeks, I've had a lot of concerned shareholders call, email, some not nasty, because they're concerned. I understand their concern. We went into a quiet mode because we had to. We were in a quiet period. We were in registration and we were on a road trip, road show. So I understand that. What I gave you was third quarter. I want to clear up a couple of things. So third quarter, we do have 5 sales slots filled, as I said in the press release. The fifth slot is filled right now with 2 part-time people, 2 half-time people, and if this person we've offered the job to doesn't accept it, we will still have these 2 people. So we have 5 slots available. All 5 are filled. It would be nice to have this person accept it. Then essentially we're going to have 6. We're going to have 5 full-time people and 2 half-time people. So we have 5 sales slots, field sales slots in the country, and all 5 are filled right now, and they've already impacted. So yes, I'm very happy that we've already gotten about $100,000 of orders in from 2 guys I thought the world of, but I said they're not going to impact us on a top line until October. So I was wrong. That's the one time I like to tell people I'm wrong. I was wrong. And I hope I'm wrong again and again before this quarter is over. So what I will say is we expect that our sales will continue to increase. Total revenue, product and services revenue, instrument revenue, and consumable revenue. We expect this to continue to increase in the third quarter, in the fourth quarter, quarter over quarter, looking over 2016. And we expect to go into 2018 with these increases behind and with a really experienced, not really experienced, but a much more experienced, really trained sales force. So it's exciting, and I'll let you come up to your own thoughts of what that might mean to where we can go. We don't give guidance in the market, but we do sometimes, and this is the second time ever I gave partial guidance. It is because of the situation of people being nervous, and also because we are literally over $400,000 in our book of sales, not in yet, but we believe we'll be in, and we're only halfway through the summer months, and one of the biggest months is yet to come. We're excited, but I'm most excited that 2 sales are coming from 2 new salespeople. So that's all I can tell you there. And I wanted to clarify that we do have all five slots filled. Right now we have 2 part-time people, and if this person that we think the world of accepts our offer, we're going to have 5 full-time people, and we're still going to have these 2 part-time people that are going to help us out behind the scenes. So I think it's the best of all worlds.
Just on a follow-up, you talked about building 25 new machines and your next-gen machines. Do you see a higher demand going forward for the next-gen machines? The ones that you have been selling.
Higher demand than what?
Higher demand than what you had currently. Do you see that?
Absolutely.
Increased demand?
Absolutely.
Going
absolutely. If we hired a sales team because we believe that there is a big unmet need out there, and we're going to fill it. And you bring up a point, so I'm going to go a little bit further and talk about something which we talked about a little bit in the S-1 and in the Q, just a few sentences, but I will expand a little bit here since I have the audience. We've had a limitation on the original instrument, which we sold for 7 years, because it had limited input and no output. It was run by a microprocessor. There was no USB port. You got what you got, and then if you wanted to see what you got, there was no tape, there was no output. The new instrument is run by a computer, touchscreen computer, and it has a USB port, and it has full output. That's not good enough, though. We had one instrument being purchased by one of the largest biopharma companies in the world, a multinational, multi-billion-dollar company that owned 2 of our earlier instruments, microprocessor-driven instruments. And they bought the new one, and they came back to us and said, look, we have a use for this instrument in the development of our biological drugs, but not the way it's in. You've got to be GMP compliant. We cannot use a non-GMP, good manufacturing practices, we cannot use a non-GMP compliant instrument in the area of validating, developing, designing, manufacturing, and quality control and releasing our biological drugs. But we have uses for your machine throughout that entire process. And, of course, we're thinking, well, if they do, so do maybe 100 other biopharma companies or more. We have uses, but you've got to be GMP compliant. To their credit, this very large company worked with us hand in glove for the last year to get this instrument and the software to be GMP compliant. We've now sold two instruments to this company that are going to be used in a GMP lab because of the year that we spent and the money that we spent and the time we spent getting this instrument and software to be GMP compliant. So we have, if not the only, one of the very few GMP compliant sample prep instruments that's available in the world today, in our opinion. And it's all because this major, major player, who we hope to name someday, existing client, been with us for a few years, we hope this group could buy, you know, half a dozen, a dozen, two dozen, whatever. And if they can, we think others can. So we're very excited. So in talking about, do we think that there's going to be a bigger demand? We think there's going to be a bigger demand. We're hiring a sales force to get that demand. We've gone out and changed our manufacturer to a local 15 minutes away, ISO certified manufacturer. We think we're onto something big. We think the biopharma space is going to be our next space to get into. We think it's much bigger than just sitting in front of a mass spectrometer. And we are hiring the people now. We've hired them to go after that. A lot of people are on vacation, but after Labor Day, we're training our guys, and after Labor Day, we're going after that market, and we think we've got a great opportunity here to fill a need that we could never fill before now. And so we absolutely believe that we're at the proverbial tip of the iceberg.
Rick, thank you for your transparency after, you know, 5 to 6 weeks of quiet period. I look forward to the next quarter and seeing the growth. Thank you.
Thank you, Gary.
Our next question is from Jeffrey Scott from Scott Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, Rick.
Hi, Jeff.
Hi. A follow-up on that last question. When you became EC compliant for the machine, where there was a process of inspection, can you take us through what is required to be GMP?
Yes, but the other one is CE marked. You're right. We went through a lot to get CE marked. It was a very long process. I'd say an eight month process and a lot of money, and so that process was successful. And a lot of that depends. It's both we shoulder some of it. We have to make changes. We have to build the instrument. They look at all kinds of things in the instrument. And we had to modify and change and do things in the instrument. And then we had to go to a certified builder, contract manufacturer, which we did. And they have to have what they told us was a 400-page dossier on everything about the instrument when they got inspected. And they did, and they passed. So we passed. We got our CE marking. GMP compliance is something which is different for every company. Each company, you name that company, that big biopharma company that's developing the next monoclonal-derived drug, they're going to have to make that drug in a GMP-compliant facility, and they're going to have to make sure that everything that's in it is GMP-compliant. And they're going to develop their own GMP-compliant dossier. And they're going to make sure that everything they bring in fits within what they define as GMP compliant. Our software was not GMP compliant. There was a lot of holes in the software, which honestly wasn't going to cause a problem with the lab down the street that's looking to discover hopefully the next marker for pancreatic cancer or prostate cancer or breast cancer. It wasn't going to cause. But these guys are building products that are going to go into human use. and they've got to make sure, and they build a dossier of everything that they do from every step and everything that they test and how they test it, and they have to have an output from every test attached to every sheet. And we didn't have that. We didn't have the ability to do any of that with our initial software. So by working with us, we've fixed all the holes. This company would take version 1.2, version 1.3, version 1.4, version 2.2, and they would send it back to us and say, you still have a problem here. You've got to fix this. You can't let this go where you can't, where someone could accidentally hit this, or someone could make this change. So it's a level, and even though for company A, they've blessed us, they've said, you are now GMP compliant, you now fit within our specifications of good manufacturing practices, we now can use you. Every single company is going to have slightly different, it's not like CE mark. Once you're CE marked, 31 countries can use you. Once you're GMP compliant, it gets us in the door of the next company, but they're going to have their own quality control specifications, and they're going to go through it, and they might find, it might take us a month to get to GMP compliant with them. So it is a whole list of things that you have to do to prove that what you're doing is right, to prove that the answer is correct, to prove that nobody could come in and falsify the data, that everything was done the way it was supposed to be done, that you have records of every single pressure point, every single temperature, etc. So it's very, very involved. It took us a year to get to that level of working on it basically every day. And that's where some of these funds went, to get to GMP compliance with this company, because this is one of the biggest biopharma companies in the world with multi-sites and multi-countries, and we sold two instruments to one of their U.S. sites in the second quarter because they said, we can now use you in our processing lab, in our quality control.
Okay. I gather this is really for data submissions to the FDA, so that they know that every batch that comes out of manufacturing has been produced exactly the same way, so would have the same effect on the person taking the drug. Is that correct?
That is certainly one of the aspects, a major part of the aspect, yes. They have to have, not so much as there is submission for new products, but there's also the inspections that they go through for existing products. And the
manufacturing process.
Actually even starting earlier than the manufacturing process, starting with the validation process and going through the design and development of the drug all the way to the developing, to the manufacturing, to the quality control before you release the drug, there are aspects in all those places that, Jeff, that require something like our instrument, and we've never, ever, ever been able to be part of that until now. And I'll be honest with you, there's so many different options where we can be. This was not high on our list until this company came to us and kind of opened our eyes and said, in so many words, or we inferred from what they said, oh my gosh, if we get this thing to be GMP compliant, not only can they buy lots and lots of instruments and lots of consumables, but all of the other biopharma companies could follow suit. So yes, that's one of the major, but it's certainly not the only.
Okay,
use.
The consumable sales from this would be very large, wouldn't it?
The consumable sales could be very large. I'm not going to say will be. I'm saying we think the consumable sales could be very large. And so I can tell you that our focus for the rest of this year, after Labor Day, and we have five guys out in the field, and more people here, maybe these two part-time people on the phone, or limited field, our focus is going to be, in addition to mass spec, our focus, and some of the mass spec is being used in those labs, our focus is going to be for that area of the biopharma business where we can break in because we think that consumable use and instrument use could be very big.
Okay. Another follow-up on the UltraShear technology. People have been looking for a way to sterilize and extend the shelf life of food for years. The technology, which had a lot of promise, was the irradiation of food. It got a hold in the sterilization of some medical products, things like field gauze for military. But as you can imagine, the irradiation of food never would be a very high marketing problem. Is your UltraShear technology as effective as the irradiation?
Well,
and obviously a much
I can't
much more
I can't
marketing issue.
I can't give you data because we've done limited data, but we're experts in high pressure. Dr. King is an expert in high pressure processing of food. I consider him one of the pioneers. When you go get that Starbucks juice and you drink it and you say, wow, this tastes great, and there's no chemicals, and I can leave it in the fridge for whatever, the next week, 2 weeks. I think of Dr. King as the pioneer that helped bring that about. He wasn't the inventor, but he certainly was one of the pioneers, one of the technical pioneers, and he was with the group at Flow that went to Starbucks and to other places. They went to a lot of food places. And I'll tell you, in the beginning, they were basically kicked out of the place. I'm not going to say literally kicked out, but they were told no, 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 no. By most of these groups they went to. And now some of those groups are coming back and they've embraced it so much that they're building plants for it. So, on the marketing end, I say this all the time. I've got two juices. One has been irradiated to kill the bacterial load or reduce it. One has been treated with Mother Nature, with high pressure. Which would you like? And I think it's very clear. There are foods that have been irradiated. There are foods that have been irradiated, but there are also it's also a marketing nightmare. So yes, I think we have a very unfair advantage. We're using Mother Nature, and how many people have bought Evolution out of Starbucks? How many tens or hundreds or whatever millions of containers of juice have been drunk from food that's been treated with high pressure? And I have to tell you, because there's no additives, my understanding is that the food companies do not have to market as high pressure treated. So you will go in there and you will find food that doesn't have additives, but it doesn't say anything about high pressure. It was a godsend for me when someone pointed out, when Dr. King actually pointed out to me the high pressure processing label on the very front of the Starbucks juice. So I don't know if, you know, I can only assume that Mother Nature is very good, very powerful, and in this case it works extremely well with high-acid food. Dr. Ting, who is an expert, feels it works equally as well, UltraShear will work equally as well with low-acid food, but he also has said that this is something which can be, the key here is UltraShear has been around for years, Jeff. We didn't invent UltraShear. Everyone's known the concept. There's papers out there on UltraShear. But what no one until us has developed is a low-cost, scalable, economical, commercializable equipment that we believe we've done, and that's why we filed the patent.
How long will this patent process take?
It was published in China and in Taiwan. That happens after 18 months. It was filed shortly thereafter in the U.S., in Japan, in many countries, in the European Union, in Canada, and Australia. So it can take this. If you get the patent, it could take another 2.5 years. It could take another half a year. There's no telling, but I want to caution everyone. We may not get the patent, and if we get the patent, it may not work as well as we think it works. However, we're not asking anyone to bet the bet the farm on this patent. We'd like you to look at us as an investment in the biopharma, biotech, life science space, because we think you've got a really good future in there. And this is something that comes along for the ride. And if it doesn't work, we want to make sure we're going to do everything we can to give everybody a great return on their investment in what we're very good at. And if this does work, then it's going to be kind of an exciting future for us.
What kind of dollars are required to take the patent application through to decision? Have you spent
when
most
you get
of the money?
When you no when we but it's not for the value here. You're talking. I'm going to throw out a number. Right now, we're you know, it's in the $5,000 to $10,000 a year range. When we get to the point where it has to be converted into several different languages for Europe, a lot of places will take English. But in Europe, you have to translate into, I believe it's German, French, and one other. But anyway, three languages. So you might spend $35,000, $40,000, $50,000 for the translation fees and the filing. And then there's a lot of fees. In Europe, you're paying fees every year. In Canada, you pay fees when you just apply. You don't even have to have the patent. So right now, it's not a lot. I'm going to say this year we might spend $10,000 or $15,000 total. Next year, it could be $100,000. But that means we are going to be granted the patent, and we have to get it translated. So that's a check I'm looking forward to writing.
Okay, thanks, Rick. I appreciate it.
You bet.
Great, thank you. There are no more questions in the queue. This does conclude the question and answer session. I'd like to turn the floor back over to management for any closing comments.
So two things. I was handed a couple of notes here while we were going over things, and one is a reminder that in fact in the second quarter we had a group order. Separate from the biopharma that ordered two, that was a biopharma company. We had an academic institution, hospital-related, order two additional instruments. They already had our instruments, and they are 100% for the moonshot. So there's an example of moonshot. We certainly might expand on that in the coming days and weeks. Also, I was handed something that reminded me that Dr. Kathy Royer, who's an expert in protein dynamics and in all, is looking at high pressure biophysics and what it does to peptides, i.e., to perhaps you could take that further into food molecules, food proteins, and Dr. Fulada, who's at Tennessee State. Presented work recently on the inactivation of food pathogens using not our ultra shear, but using our existing system of high pressure. So we have not only Dr. King, but we have a number of people out there that are in the high pressure field related to food, and that they're already starting to publish. And so we're not novices here. So we have Ed Ting to a pioneer in that area, and now we have customers that are using our existing systems, and they are, I can tell you, chomping at the bit to be able to work with us once we get the ultra shear to a point that we can perhaps supply them an add-on or a new instrument to their work in the food market. So everything's exciting. We are excited about the future. We're happy with the second quarter numbers, but we're far from satisfied. I think everybody on the phone call understands what this company's gone through in the last 6 months, particularly the last 3 months, where our focus has been in many different areas. Our cash has been limited, and yet we were still able, once again, to have quarter over quarter total revenue, product service revenue, instrument revenue exceed last year. But we're not satisfied with that, and that's why we've hired the team. And we didn't hire the team to have more quarters like the first quarter, second quarter, which were good quarters. We hired the team to start to be proactive in our selling and to start putting up some what we think could be much better numbers. So at that, I will thank everybody again. I appreciate this is by far the most questions we've ever had, which I expected since we've had no press releases to speak of since early June. And I appreciate your time. One of the good things about pulling the registration statement is that we're no longer in registration, which opens up the door to allow us to go back to communicating with you guys and others on a more even basis, which has bothered me greatly for the last 2 months. So that's the good thing, and we are certainly, we know what we have. We know it's going to take funding. We're working on a lot of options for funding, and while we do that, we're going to start to kick this thing into higher gear with our new sales team. So thanks again for joining us. Joe, thanks for your update. And as always, if you have any questions for Joe or me, as long as it's not material inside information, you can call us. We're happy to clear anything up. You just call us here, and we'd be happy to take your call. Matt, we're all done, and appreciate your help here, and thanks to everyone for being on the call.